Hi, this is Chris Kelso with Unmanned. Welcome to Drunken Drones, Season 2, Episode 1, Part 1. This session ends up going about 3 hours long, and what we learn from this is that you should not do an episode drinking for 3 hours straight. By the end of this segment, I was pretty toasty. I'm not sure if my colleagues were. I can't really speak for them, but 3 hours of drinking and doing a podcast gets people pretty toasty. So we also used a different software version this time, and because of that, some of the audio can kind of crackle in and out when a bunch of us are laughing or cutting up on each other at the same time. And I do apologize for that. That's something we're going to fix in future software editing. So it should not be an issue on further episodes. In this episode, part one, we go over COVID international deployments, the next possible administration's foreign policy, and UAV operators' arrests and that legal gray area. So crack a beer, sit down, and enjoy the show. And then listen to part two if you're still interested. Thanks.
All right, welcome to Unmanned Drunken Drones, Episode 3. I guess this is Season 2, because Episodes 1 and 2 were last year. So with me today is guest Colin and Endo, and I'll let him talk about that one later if he wants to.
Oh, we're going to get real drunk for that one.
Ah, shit. So many of you out there may already know, but on Drunken Drones, we like to pop a beer, say what we're drinking, and then we get into it. I am drinking a Trogs Wild Elf. Out of Pennsylvania, seasonal beer. I guess it's like the fucked up sister of Mad Elf or something. 11%, tastes like cherries. It's kind of a sour, actually, and it's got some honey in there. Colin, what are you drinking tonight?
Man, I'm doing the easy, lazy one. I just got a Yingling. I just got back in town, so I just grabbed a case at the store. And, yeah, we'll get back into the travel stories later, but I haven't had time to go and explore any of the finer local beers where I am yet. So yeah, simple. I got Yingling.
That's two for Pennsylvania tonight. So Endo, what do you got?
So it's going to be some West Coast stuff, but like I was saying before we started recording, my beer came warm. So I'm doing that trick where, you know, I took a paper towel, got it wet, poured some salt on it, stuck it in like the bottom of the freezer underneath some ice.
Wait, so you put like, salt on flash it? Freeze it.
Well, you put salt on the outside because I don't know.
I don't know, man. The way you were talking about that, it sounded like a fun Tuesday night, but
it sounded like some fucking witchcraft bullshit.
It's science.
Dude, I've done the paper towel wrap before in the freezer. I wet the paper towel, then I wrap it, and it freezes real quick, gets the beer cold. I never thought about putting salt around it.
I think someone told me, maybe it was Boy Scouts, but they're like, salt will get it colder fast. I don't know.
You were going to drink in the Boy Scouts?
What edge was that?
I went to a swamp and some witch, you know, took some blood and made me say some weird stuff.
Oh, so you're on the East Coast for this one. Shit. So, Colin, you just got back literally like what, like 48 hours ago or something?
I've been home, I don't know, what's today, the 17th? I'm on like day 5 now.
Okay. So you're still tired of shit, not acclimated?
Yeah, and bro, actually, yeah, if our bosses are listening to this, I technically did not arrive home till the 13th. So yeah, I guess I'm on day 4.
I don't think they are, but thanks for throwing that one out.
That trip was not fun this time home.
No, yeah. Dude, it was terrible.
So,
so
Colin, you just got back. Endo, you got home when?
Middle of September-ish.
Okay, not too long ago. I got home in July. So that's kind of the first thing I wanted to bring up. I thought it would be a great topic is how COVID is ruining international travel, especially in our GoCo community here. And, you know, how is it different for each of us? I know going home for me, it was a pain in the ass. I had to basically throw away everything in my backpack just to get on a plane to come out, except for my laptop and an iPad. And even that was a little bit too heavy. I just kind of bullied my way past the TCNs or wherever the fuck they are to get on the plane. And then it was about 22 hours. We went, you know, from Middle East to Spain or something and then grounded there for a couple hours and refueled and then flew to shit, DC, and then I finally got back to New York, but God, it felt like forever. What was that like for you, Endo, since you were the one that was closer after me?
I did a similar route, you know, stopped in Spain, and then we went to Baltimore. Mm. And we flew into, was it Baltimore? No, it wasn't Baltimore. It was
Dulles.
Dulles, thank you very much. It was Dulles, and that flight was miserable. The military planes were more comfortable than that flight.
Oh yeah, man. When you go mil air, you hang up the hammock and you stretch out and.
Yeah, you can get on the sides. You know, you can stretch out. Shoot, you could just lay on top of the bags if you.
I would gladly take a C-17 around the world before I got on another airliner.
Shoot, you go on a C-130, and the thing shakes so much it's its own vibrating chair, and it's like rocking a baby to sleep.
I couldn't sleep on mine. We were jam packed in there. I had to sit straight up the whole time.
So heading out there, it was just my crew that was in the C-17, along with like a couple of pilots and that were going to a different base. But it was like an empty plane just for us there. And it was great.
I was on a C-130, I think. And we were kind of packed in there. But
yeah, when I left the site this time, there were three passengers on the C-130 and they made a quick stop somewhere. But so I get on the plane. I've been up all day. It's like a midnight show for like a 3 a.m. departure. And I got on there. I laid down on the, you know, the red web seats, and they're basically a cot when you lay down on them. When I woke up, the other two passengers were gone. There was more cargo on the plane, and all of a sudden we're landing at Bagram.
Now, was it the same thing for you coming home, Colin? Was it still, did you get on civilian air and then take that 1970s bullshit plane with, you know, with nothing, no amenities, no TV, no Wi-Fi, no food, it seemed like.
So I took, you know, for the site that we were all at last, I took kind of the normal way out to Dubai and then home from there. So,
oh, wow. Okay.
But I had
did that whole COVID test business to go there.
Dude, so the COVID test alone was a giant shit show. So I had to take a test on the site we were at just to leave that site. So I had to have one there, but that one wasn't valid for the contract air flight to get me into Dubai.
How is it not a valid test? I thought there's only like one test.
It has to do with what the Emirati government considers a recognized lab, and the U.S. Army is not a recognized lab to the Emiratis. So I had to go up to the contract clinic at Bagram. Their test takes 4 days to come back because they have to ship it out to this lab in Kabul or somewhere. So I had to get up there 4 days prior and like live in gymnasium barracks for 4 days. Like it was a mess.
What side of Bagram were you on? Were you on the Army side? What they call warrior side or?
Yeah. So I ended up on warrior side because I got there in the dark. I was dead tired. I'm dragging all my crap around. And, you know, I got bounced around to like three different lodging offices. So the one guy says, well, you know, your ID card says Air Force on it. Maybe you can go over to the Air Force guys and they'll give you some lodging. I was like, all right, how do I get there? And he gave me some very vague and, you know, unusable directions. And I was like, you know what? Screw it. He told me what bus stop the warrior side is. I'll just hop on the bus and go. And that was probably a mistake. I wouldn't recommend that because, I was in this like gymnasium looking building. I had to have at least 200 beds in it. And it was all contractors. And I don't mean contractors like us. It was all the TCNs. Like that's where they get dumped, where they get their permanent housing. So,
I got a story about that for my trip home too.
Nice. Yeah, it was awful. And, at some point somebody just walked over to my bed and stole my blanket. I was, with the minimal baggage I was allowed to bring, I didn't have any of my like normal deployed bedding with me. So I get there, I go to the BX one day, buy like one of those thin felt blankets and like a camping pillow, and then I make my bed. And it was that same day. I didn't even get to sleep on it. That same day, I come back in. Like, I walked to the bathroom or something. I was seriously gone only about 10 minutes. And the pillow's still there. The blanket's gone.
Dude, I wish you had been sleeping when they stole it.
I'm telling you, right? Like, I wouldn't put it past them. Man, there's blankets in there. I mean, everybody and his brother has like these elaborate, you know, tent city spank tanks built. And, you know, I'm sitting there. I'm like, look, I'm only going to be here for a couple of days. I'm not building anything. But yeah, some asshole came and stole my blanket.
I guess it could have been worse. There could have been worse things.
I mean, yeah, I sure
could have. Maybe you could have got in there with you. You know, who knows?
I mean.
Could have made you his prison wife.
I would have protested that in a very violent way.
Deployment, Colin might not have. He might not have done anything.
Dude, I was done with any kind of bullshit at that point.
Endo, what happened with yours? Did you lose a blanket too?
Did not. So I had a similar trip. So originally it was me and three other guys who managed to get Millair, and we were going to go. The route that we went in, we were going to go back that route out. At the last second, they canceled our flight. I don't know, something got messed up, and they booked us last minute on like the last planes out. So, our site, Chris, you at our site, that last month there, like they were really shutting down, all the flights out. Mm-hmm. And so every flight was just packed because they're just, you know, getting all the contractors out all at once. So every flight is packed. So like that's like every contractor on that site. So, you know, chow halls, stores, yeah. Everything. It was just a mad rush. So we managed to get a flight out, and of course it's out of Bagram. It's the contract flight, contract civilian flight. So me and two other guys had to leave a day early, stay at Bagram in Warrior Side. Probably that same giant gymnasium, but they put us in with the Nigerian TCNs.
Those are the guys.
And they stole your blanket?
Yeah.
Oh, man, you must have not been cool. They were super nice to me.
I didn't do a thing to them.
Messing with you. Endo's the one that stole your blanket. He just didn't tell
you. Yeah.
He said, I know the son of a bitch. He's not going to do anything.
Seriously, I counted. I was one of maybe 10 Americans in that entire building.
So did you talk to any of those guys at all? Like why they were all there? They're stuck in there.
The end guys?
Yeah. So their site, they've lost their contract. They've been in there since like June.
What?
Yeah.
Why didn't they get home?
Because Dubai shut down. So they need Dubai to be back open to hop back over to get into their site, to get into Nigeria.
Well, I went through.
So Dubai. They're like in this limbo.
Holy shit.
I went through Dubai. I mean, Dubai's reopened.
Colin took their spot.
I guess, or maybe, you know, Dubai to Nigeria, they're not doing, or
maybe
I don't know.
Nigeria forgot that they were there.
Possibly at this point, who knows?
I
mean, but
the guy I talked to one dude, and he acted like that was the dumping point where, you know, it's like the transition housing when you first show up and they don't have your room ready or whatever. He said that was like that's the reason he was in there. Was he's there for a week or so until he gets more permanent lodging.
That's still their dumping point. That's still a transition lodge, but like especially the guys with like the super nice spank tanks, or like the, you know, people had their whole living room setups up with TVs and whatnot, those permanent looking stuff. Those guys have been there since June.
You go into a transit tent and you bring a TV because you know you're going to be there a long time.
No,
what was that? What was that Tom Hanks movie about the dude stuck in the airport for like 30 years or something like that?
Terminal.
That's those dudes.
No, dude, it felt like I was evacuating from a hurricane.
I thought you were talking about Castaway.
I mean, same, right?
How many times has Tom Hanks been stuck somewhere for 30 years?
Because it was like the fall of the Soviet Union or something like that, or there was some coup in his country, and so he was like, if he couldn't enter, he couldn't legally enter, like, I think it was England was the story. I don't remember. I'd have to look up dude that got stuck for 30 years in an airport, but they made a movie about him. Oh, my iPad's dead.
Don't hang out with Tom Hanks.
I know.
And then, right? Yeah, he got Tom Hanks to play. Which is funny because he's like not Middle Eastern, but like, you know, the that Caucasus region. It was a stan of some sort, I think.
You mean Caucasian?
No.
Yeah. No. But they're basically stuck there. Going back to the point, they're whatever politics are involved in, it's all because of COVID. So, however bad our trip is, at least we got home. At least our country wants us.
What a transition. COVID. How is that going to fuck up the winter deployments coming up?
Well, so
with the rising cases, the shutdowns looming.
Dude, forget about
travel.
Forget about COVID on that for a second. I saw a news story drop today, and one of our colleagues predicted this, that if Trump thinks he's losing this election, and I'm not trying to go into the politics of it.
Oh, what have you done?
I'm not talking politics.
Turn back now.
I'm saying if and when Trump starts thinking that he lost it or they actually call it, one of our colleagues was saying that he's going to pull everybody out of Afghanistan. Say that he was the guy that did it. And it's already happened today. He dropped it. And
you think it's going to be like a knee jerk, I'm going to fulfill my promise, the last second thing?
Yes. And so I saw the news story came out today. He ordered troop levels down to 2,500 in Afghanistan, like before the inauguration.
The 15th. Yeah. I saw that same story. I didn't read it, so maybe it's still here, but it was, I think it was Afghanistan and Iraq. He was drawing down.
Oh, yeah. I didn't. I'll be honest. I haven't been following Iraq.
Neither.
I swore I'd never go back to that country, and I left it dust after that.
You know, I think literally everyone in the last 20 years has said, "I swear I'm never going back." And we are.
I haven't done it yet. So I actually did want to go to Afghanistan, and I got to go. So I'm happy with that. That was on my bucket list. I know it's a weird fucking list, but that was on my list.
So. Wait, your last deployment was your first time in Afghanistan?
Yeah. So check this out.
Congratulations.
In 2008, I went to Iraq and I extended to try and do a short tour, to do a 6-monther. And so I went to two different sites in Iraq. And then I tried to extend to go set up a site in Jalalabad in Afghanistan. And, that one didn't end up happening at the time. And so I didn't get to go to Afghanistan. And then shortly after I came home from my deployment, I went into contracting to be an instructor at the FTU. And so I never got to deploy again until I went back to GOCO. So for 10 years, I was an instructor in the States. I didn't get a chance to go to Afghanistan. So this was my very first chance to go to Afghanistan. And I jumped on it the second I could.
Nice.
I wanted to say, you know, I flew a lot of combat in Afghanistan. I always wanted to I just wanted to always go to that country for real. So
is it everything you expected and more?
I think I got in at a bad time.
You did. You did.
I got there March 1st, and like 2 weeks later, the whole fucking country went tits up. So
all right, I can tell you,
it's not Afghanistan. It's not Afghanistan.
I'm not the oldest guy in Afghanistan, you know, that has ever deployed or anything like that. My first deployment was 2009, but I did go to Afghanistan once in either late 2009, maybe early 2010. That was my first time, and you didn't miss much.
Really? I heard it was fantastic back in the day. The food was amazing. The amenities were good. I heard it was really, really nice back in the day.
The amenities for what they were.
I was the guy that got stuck. I was flying 130s back then, and I was the guy that got stuck babysitting the plane while everybody else went to, the boardwalk at Kandahar, and I guess they went to TGI Fridays or some nonsense. I don't know.
What a TGI Fridays there?
They had a Tim Hortons.
Yeah. What'd you say, Endo?
They had a Tim Hortons. They had a Timmy Ho's.
They had Tim Hortons in Afghanistan.
You get some donuts and some poutine.
I can't even get Tim Hortons in New York. Fucking Canada's right across. I think they shut them all down. But now it's just Dunkin' Donuts, which I'm a fan.
Well, it's not even Dunkin' Donuts anymore. It's Dunkin'.
Oh, really? They got rid of the donuts part?
They got rid of the donuts.
What'd you say, Colin?
Marketing-wise, they want to emphasize the coffee. They're going after Starbucks.
Nobody likes. They want to be like a Starbucks.
Dunk, I got a bag of Dunkin' coffee in my house, and after being dark roast for like 6 months, I went to try this medium Dunkin'. It didn't do it. It didn't do it for me.
They want to be like a breakfast spot. They think, oh, you think donuts? That's the only thing they have. But no, they want to be like a breakfast destination. So it's just Dunkin', though.
Because people are going to sit there and look at Dunkin' and go, oh, I didn't know what that. What's Dunkin'? I've never heard of Dunkin' before. People have known what Dunkin' Donuts has been for 50 fucking years.
Well,
how
yeah,
they brand it now.
Well, you bring up an important point to kind of steer us back to deployed type of stuff. Is all right.
You're the host.
Everybody out there,
drones and donuts. Out
there that wants to send care packages to us deployed types. It doesn't have to be dark roast every time. You can send some light roast. You can send some medium.
Seriously. Don't listen to Colin, everybody. He wants that weak shit.
Dark roast.
He wants that weak pussy coffee. All right. No,
I'll take a light roast and then I will brew it like motor oil. But
you know what I didn't realize I was missing out on until I got back home? Hot chocolate. Send hot chocolate. Everything is Keurig. Everything is Keurig now. You can send hot chocolate Keurigs.
That's true. I'm not a Keurig fan personally.
Neither am I. Makes weak coffee.
It's just not my thing. But I accidentally put a hot cocoa Keurig thing in once, trying to get coffee. And when you're expecting coffee and you drink hot cocoa, it's kind of a letdown.
Yeah. Well, so you want me to crack a beer on mic? Here it is.
There we go. Thank you so much. Our first crack. What is it this time? If you say Yingling again.
It's all I got in the fridge, dude. I've made one trip before.
You basic bitch.
Well, and all right, real talk here. If I start I've never Yingling, had Yingling.
It's just not going to make a noise, you know?
No, that's okay. I appreciate the crack.
Yeah.
I was hoping to get one of those on this session.
You were complaining before we hit the record button, so there it is.
I know. I appreciate that. Thank you for saving that. I'm almost out of my first one, so I got to go pop a cork. Mine's got corks in it. That's how you know it's good.
Well, that's fancy.
Yeah, it's fancy shit. Okay, Wild Ale's no joke. It's also 12%, so each beer is like three of them, so I'm going to get pretty toasty here.
Is it like an urn? Is it like an urn? Is it like little jugs that says, has like XXX on it?
No, but if they did, I would still drink it. All right, so... moving on from the deployments and COVID, I liked your point about how if Trump might pull everybody out here at the last second. Let's go a different route. Let's say the election's finally over, all the bullshit litigation's done, whatever, right? And let's just say Biden-Harris is the team in place. What does that look like for us in the future?
I mean, I think it makes our jobs a little more solid, because I have not honestly been following it. Politics makes me tired, and I
know
I don't care. But complete fake news, could be complete bullshit, is Biden was going to surge back into Afghanistan, at least, if not Iraq. And I was like, well, hell, that's job security.
Trump's the first guy in 30 years not to start a new conflict.
Yeah.
So do you think Biden-Harris is going to go, hey, let's – I mean, he just made a comment on the news a couple days ago about foreign policy, about, America's going to be back in the game or something like that regarding foreign policy. Does that mean we can expect more work?
But in different places now.
You think he's going to want to put his toys in the sand?
So
I don't want to – go ahead, Endo.
So one point I want to add on this is not going into politics. I haven't been following his policy is, but our program, drones and everything, skyrocketed under Obama. So if it's a continuation of that, I think we're going to see a huge surge in drone operations from the Biden administration, just because, they're going to be like, welcome back to the Obama days and kind of doing that stuff. But I think it's going to be in different spots. I think they'll take advantage. I think they'll take advantage and be like, oh, dang it, we got out of Afghanistan, and now it's a shit show. That's all the Trump guys' fault, but we're not going to go back. I think they'll use that political leverage, and I don't think we'll be going back to Afghanistan, but we'll be surging other places. They'll use that excuse to like open up in other spots. The Pacific, they've been wanting drones there for years. Africa, that's been in and out of that for years. Right. So I think there will be more work, but it's going to be different spots. You know what I mean?
Africa makes sense to me. Africa makes sense to me because of AFSOC's presence, if you will.
Have you been? I know you haven't been following news. Have you seen all this stuff going on with Ethiopia?
No.
We got like a full-on civil war coming up.
Over what? Food?
No, they got a whole region. Like, I think it's a region up north. Don't quote me on it. And there was a region up north that's essentially broken off.
Interesting.
How did they even fight? I thought they were all starving out there.
That's like 30, 40 years ago now.
Yeah.
That shows how much I follow Ethiopia.
Yeah, right.
It's always been a hungry joke. I know that's insensitive, but I don't give a shit. I don't have any Ethiopian listeners.
That's another thing. So, like, tangent again, but like that Ethiopian famine, like people think it was like the whole country. It's just the poor parts, like the wealth gap between it. So like the people in the cities versus like, you know, the actual farmers way out there, the gap was just so big that, you know, it was those farmers. So it was a massive amount of people, but it wasn't the whole country kind of deal.
All those starving jokes just came at the expense of the poor people.
Yeah, dick.
I thought it was the whole country. I thought it was like, I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, just to have nots.
All right, so
that's a really good point from the global perspective, though, because, Chris, I said this on one of the other episodes I've been on. I forget which one. But so years ago, I got a chance to see the worldwide demand for RPA stuff.
Okay.
So like every geographical combatant commander had requested like 25 lines of MQ-9 or so, you know, it was ridiculous numbers. So like at the time, Afghanistan probably had, you know, 15, 20 lines. And then the guy in Africa is requesting another 15 or 20 and he had like 3. So this is the same for every geographical command, you know, whether it's Southcom or UCOM or whatever it was, everybody wanted like 20 or 30 of these birds every day. And it was a joke. I mean, there was no way, but like, right. if you're going to be asking for shit, then swing for the fences. Right. So the idea that we're drawing down in CENTCOM just tells me that the demand isn't really going away. It's just going to get moved to somewhere else. And some of the inside information that we've been getting suggests that, yeah, even if we draw down in Afghanistan, those CAPs and those LREs already have new locations that are, you know, looking for them. So, I mean,
and I understand that. I understand that the supply did not meet the initial demand. And as the demand in certain AORs decreases, that demand can then be supplied in other ones. Right. My question, going back to Endo's initial statement, is in PACAF, what could we possibly be doing? I mean, who the hell are we going to be watching in PACAF? Or what would be the point of even being over there?
We'd say North Korea, but the big answer
is that does not make any sense to me, and I'll tell you why. Because we just established what some could be considered the biggest breakthrough in peace in decades with North Korea, and like I said, I'm not being political, but if we just for the first time American president crossed that DMZ, cross the border, right? We seemed to be playing nice with North Korea. Why the hell would we send over a bunch of spy planes? Doesn't that immediately break the trust of North Korean's government? Like, hey, everything's cool, right? Yeah, it is. Cool. Here's a bunch of fucking spy planes. Just to make sure it stays cool or what? I mean, well, plus, not even to mention all the surface-to-air threats that are over there in PACAF. I mean, anyone that's studying North Korea and China and shit knows they can shoot pretty much anything out of the damn sky. So
the whole thing to be over there is just a show of presence in the area over international waters. Cause that's, like I said, the big C word, you know, China is China, to get it political.
China. You gotta do it with a whine in your voice. China.
Hang on, hold on a second. I'm gonna get back to my point, but my point is brought to you by Crooked Lane Zoom Wall Altbier.
Oh,
there it is.
That's a premium can.
What was it?
Crooked Lane Zoom Wall. Zoom Wall.
Okay, explain. What is that?
It is a...
I'm thinking IPA.
In your hands, our version of the Altstieg. It's maltier, hoppier, higher alcohol version of the better known German style Altbier. It's bready with light spice and citrus hop flavors and fig, sultana, and toffee. I don't know how strong it is. Just
gave me a beer boner. That sounded delicious.
6.5% alcohol by volume.
He got real fancy on us.
Yo, it's West Coast craft.
It's West Coast craft. Well, that was a great plug for that beer company. You should probably tag them in this. But all right. You think that
sponsors for the episode, by the way.
Did you say?
I said you're looking for sponsors for the episode.
No, I'm not. I do my own commercials. I basically just plug the Anchor app that I broadcast on because they're the only ones that'll pay me.
Brought to you by Cold Bud Light.
Yeah. If anyone's listening of the beer companies I'm drinking, please sponsor me. I could use it. That way I can pay for guests.
Coors Light. It's better when the mountains are blue.
You pay guests?
No, I don't. That's why I'm fucking broke. I need money to pay guests. I got requested on Facebook if I paid my guests to do these shows, and I said no. And then
and I haven't gotten a dime. So
we're paid with exposure and experience.
You know how much I've made on podcasting? $9. All right, you can have three of my dollars because you've done a couple episodes.
Is that gross or is that net?
That's gross. That's not including taxes. So if Colin takes three and the government takes three, I'm left with three. So that's where we're at now.
Am I splitting my cup of Colin? Colin, you owe me $1.50.
The first one's free.
I accept Pogs.
The first one's free. You got to do one episode.
I actually have 50 cents worth of Pogs in my wallet right now.
Shit, I got a Pog shirt. It's got a bunch of Pogs on it. It's got a couple slammers.
No, we're talking about the Afy's change.
So for anybody that doesn't know, you don't get metal change. You don't, well, I take that back. You go to the BX or PX or exchange, whatever you want to call it. Right. They don't give you metal change. They give you these little Pogs. That's what they look like. If you don't remember Pogs, ask your grandpa, that are just cardboard coins. And they're only exchangeable at Afy's. So if you're at a deployed location, you can just hand them over like a quarter or a nickel or however much it's worth.
I think that's all they come in is quarters.
They come in,
no,
they come in nickels, dimes, and 25. Yeah,
really? I didn't know.
You can't get other denominations. Funny story, if you ever try to use them stateside at an exchange, each one of those tokens, they have to measure, at least like as of 5 years ago, last time anybody ever tried this, they have to log each one of those Pogs as a gift certificate. So they got to bring out this big old book and register each one of those. Oh, so we had a guy, hilarious. We had a guy buy like $10 worth, like, you know, whatever at an exchange, and he paid in Pogs because that was what he had left over. each one of these coins, each one of these cardboard coins.
Oh, that's
as a fantastic gift certificate.
Buying bottles of liquor with like a bag of nickels. Yeah, save these from Nom.
They want to act like they don't accept those at stateside BXs, but you can.
That's why. That is why.
You can probably make them yourself. It's like thin cardboard with a 25-cent and a flag on the back or some shit. I mean,
it's not like there's a barcode or anything on it. Like,
make fake currency and use it at the BX. You should make one up. Make like a $10 fucking BX coin and bring it in and see if you can get away with it.
No,
we're all going to be implicated in a crime now. You know, someone's going to be out there and he's going to turn us all. He's going to roll over on all of us. Where'd you learn how to do that?
All these
I listen to this podcast.
do not represent my company or anything I'm affiliated with. I don't know what the warnings that people say in the beginning. This is not financial advice.
It's not financial advice, legal advice, military advice, or really any advice you should be listening to.
Yeah, we're covered.
Performance is not an indicator of future returns.
There it is. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I'm glad that we have a pilot on here that knows some of the law.
Yeah, don't counterfeit Afy's gift cards.
He's a pilot. All he's learned is like, I am the law.
You know, the E4s out there are like, oh shit, this is a great idea, man. This is fucking E4 Mafia style right here. So, all right. So PACAF, we're thinking that we're basically just doing a solid to South Korea and Japan and saying, hey, look, we'll bring our toys over and you guys can feel better about it.
Basically.
Oh shit.
Go circle around those islands in the South Pacific that everyone talks about in the news, you know.
What, just, Australia?
Yes. Fly there just to be there.
Australia.
Australia would use us if they could for border patrol.
Yeah.
Like, dude, we talk about boat people, like, you know, from Cuba and
pirates?
Antilles and all that. No, those are ship people. Ship, S-H-I-P, for anybody
I want to believe there's pirates out there.
You want to be like that South Park episode and just go to Somalia?
Yeah, I just want to believe there's Aussie pirates. But, shit, the Aussies would use us to shoot their wildlife. Fucking... they got all kinds of deadly shit out there.
But no, like, they got, like, dude, the Aussies have a whole island. So, like, we talk about our border patrol and, like, putting people in pens and everything. They have a whole offshore island. The island founded by prisoners that were shipped off to an island have made their own island to ship prisoners?
Oh, shit. They have a mini Australia?
They have their own mini Australia.
Awesome. Australia, too.
The process.
Do they call it England? Is the island called England? That'd be good.
I don't know what the island's called.
I need to get another beer. So we're going to take a quick commercial break so I can get a beer because I don't have any in front of me. So quick commercial break time. Pause. All right, cool. So welcome back, everybody. I hope you enjoyed my voice again on the stupid commercial sponsorship. Was that a beer crack?
It was.
I just popped mine. You can't hear it because it's a fancy cork.
Ah, well, I'm making up for it for you then.
Another Yingling, huh?
Yeah, it's all I got in the fridge.
Yeah, I got to stop saying another Yingling because you said that twice.
Another Yingling. Actually, I never had one. So, no, for real, like, people treat Yingling across the Rockies like it's fucking gold.
Seriously? Well, it's because you can't get it on the West Coast.
Yeah, I know you can't. I know. So when I was down in New Mexico, some dude like went home, packed his entire pickup truck, like, you know, 8-foot bed pickup truck, just with Yingling. Like, enough Yingling that if he got pulled over, there's probably some rum running laws from the 1930s that would apply to him.
Dude, when I was in
C-130s. He did not share.
When I was in C-130s, we basically used those planes as beer trucks. So... I was stationed in Texas and we would get, you know, we'd constantly be going to the East Coast to drop, you know, airborne guys and stuff. Always had exercises at Pope, you know, Fort Bragg or Fort Benning. And on the way home, there was always like damn near a pallet position of Yingling on the plane.
Well, growing up in Pennsylvania, we used to have quarter Yingling night. And for a quarter, you could get a pitcher of Yingling.
Oh man, you're old. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, I live in my day.
A Yingling,
I'm from Pennsylvania, and I came from a smaller town. So
the bar had ahead. Its own currency. You gave him a wooden nickel. And...
I know I look like I'm 50, but I swear I'm 35.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in Maryland, and Yingling was a staple, so. Now, like, you always have your standby beers that live in the fridge, and then you go get the nice stuff so that after you drink, you know, one or two good craft beers and now you can't taste them anymore, you revert back to whatever, you know, your bullshit leave in the fridge all the time beer is. So there's always a case of Yingling in my fridge, and then I'll go get like a six pack of something I've never had before and, you know, drink one or two of those and really enjoy them. But then after that, But then why am I going to waste business. The good stuff when I can barely taste it anymore? I'm going to switch to something that's easy.
That makes sense, I guess. I try not to drink light beers in the winter. I don't know. I'm a seasonal guy. I drink light beer in the summer when I'm golfing and stuff. And then I drink the heavy, like the stouts and the nitros and the, you know, pumpkin ales or whatever gets me jacked up in about three beers. That's the stuff I drink in the winter.
Have you seen like this new trend? I don't know if it's a new thing, but it's like, it's basically day drinking beers. So it's like
bringing back three, two. I wouldn't call it a trend.
Yeah, no,
it's like day drinking beers, like 3-2 beer. Like, remember, I don't know if like, but back in Kansas, they made a big point, like, you know, we're getting rid of 3-2 beer, the gas station beer.
3-2 beer, that's what it's okay. called? That's the brand? Okay.
No, so.
All right.
States with blue laws, instead, like real quick history, in states with blue laws, you know, the laws that were passed over for back in Prohibition times, and then Prohibition ended, and they brought in these whole new laws. So you could only buy full beers. That's like, you know, 5% and up from liquor stores. So gas stations, grocery stores and all that, the most powerful beer that they could sell was 3.2%.
Okay.
So if you wanted to go get like actual beer, you'd have to go to a gas station and gas stations, or you had to go to a liquor store, and then liquor stores would close at a certain time. So I lived down on the border of Missouri. So yeah, so it was a whole mess. But then like, I just noticed, I saw in the grocery store after I got back in September, it's like this whole like, it's back as a trend now. It's like, oh, this is your day drinking beer. This is when you just want to, you know, golf and beer. It's like it's 3-2 beer.
How am I supposed to swing a golf club correctly if I'm only drinking 3-2?
Right? It's either I get better or I stop caring. That's why I'm drinking. Like,
if I want to pee a lot, I'll drink water. Like, I don't need 3-2 beer. But the funny thing is, out in Utah, I went TDY out to Utah years ago. And, you know, so we go to the Shopette to stock up for the week or whatever. And I guess they must get their beer from like local distributors in Utah, and all of the normal like shitty light beer that we think about, like Coors Light, Bud Light, all that stuff, had these big orange stickers on the packages that said strong beer. And I was like, Bud Light, strong beer.
That's exactly what I was talking about. Cause Utah is one of those states that still has like
prohibition.
They would if they could.
Yeah,
it's all the Mormons.
Yeah,
like anything over like 3.2% is considered a strong beer, so it needs like an extra warning on it.
Wonder if they sell NyQuil.
You know, probably.
I don't know.
I think it's an underrated drink.
Not the good stuff.
All right. So, as I said during that commercial break, there's been some cool shit going on with the civilian quadcopter dudes lately. And they've been getting arrested.
That's like a lot. Cool.
Like a lot. I mean, it's super cool. So here's a good story. Just
get arrested. This tight. Whole
segment of the audience.
Yeah, I know. Everyone listening. It came out of Michigan, actually, in Flint, Michigan, which I swear that city is like always on the cusp of controversy. So in Flint, Michigan, I guess there was some drone dudes that were in Genesee State Park that were, I don't know, just filming the park. Doing normal shit, right? And park rangers showed up and basically arrested this dude, confiscated all of his electronics, took his phone, everything, and arrested him. And so he took it to court, and he actually hired an aviation lawyer. I didn't even know that shit existed.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently it does. So he hires an aviation lawyer, takes the government to court, or whoever's in charge of the park rangers, takes them to court, the town, whatever, right? He wins the case. Park rangers get a judge-ordered, basically, like, cease and desist. Like, you can't touch these guys. It's a public park, and they fall under the FAA, which is a federal regulation. And these guys are 107, so they're federally qualified to fly.
Now, is he part 107?
Yes.
Okay, so he had all his ducks in a row.
He was good to go. He was federally legally able to fly his drone for business, to be compensated for everything, right? So he's good to go. So he wins this court case, takes it to back to the cops, basically. Takes it back to the police, park rangers, and says, here you go, I won. Then somehow, this drone organization in Flint, Michigan, somehow they get recording of the cops' radio. I don't know how they did it, but they got a recording of the park rangers' radio transmissions after this.
And from, they from hear the incident?
It was live. This guy recorded live park ranger radio after the court.
There's websites that do that for ATC too. I mean, you can go to Live ATC, and anytime there's an incident or a plane crash or whatever, people go back and pull the logs from Live ATC and turn them into YouTube videos and stuff. So I'm sure there's the same thing for law.
Yeah, police scanners were a thing for a long time, and that takes money. That takes money, and Flint and money are not things that go together.
Yeah, I know.
They probably have real drinking water.
These are private organizations that are recording all of this stuff.
Right. Right. It was a private org. It was like a Michigan drone operators organization or something. I don't remember the name. Right.
They probably went to livepdscanner.com or whatever. I mean, I don't know if that's a website, but they probably went to some company or some website that already does that and already records all this stuff. And all they did was pull the logs.
Yeah. So they record this, and then this dude puts it on YouTube. And the park rangers are talking in their car or whatever, right? And they basically said, hey, did you see that we got this court order and we can't touch these guys and the judge ruled against us and blah, blah, and all that stuff. And the guy's like, yeah, but we can make it basically so uncomfortable that they don't want to come near us. Like we can go out of our way and make it so that they don't want to be in the park. So, and the guy's like, yeah, I guess so. You know, do whatever you feel is in your best judgment. So this guy records, and he live recorded him basically getting arrested again, or not, maybe not arrested, but the park ranger basically shutting him down. Right. And, telling him here's this paperwork. It says that you can't fly here, blah, 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 all this stuff. Guy records it, takes it back to court with all this evidence again and says, look at everything I've got now. They're still basically fucking with me.
Did he have that recording about them?
And they've talked about it, right? And so the judge then ruled that the paperwork that they brought to the drone guys was old paperwork from years ago, and basically judged against the cops again and said, basically, shut the fuck up and leave these guys alone. And the dude live recorded everything. So then the kid goes on Facebook, puts all this information, or YouTube, Facebook, whatever it is. He puts all this information out in this drone organization, right? In Michigan. It's like drone operators in Michigan. And says every drone operator in the state needs to come to Michigan to this state park and fly on the same day. Like they wanted hundreds of UAVs up in the air just to fuck with these park rangers.
That's a recipe for disaster.
Right. I mean, you take your winnings humbly, right? No, not these guys. This gets posted. And what they do is the park rangers shut down the park. They shut down the whole park for the day, knowing that this event was going to happen. And that way they couldn't fly their drones. So there's like a huge war going on right now in Michigan. This is like a month ago. This is pretty recent. So there's like a huge war right now. And they're using this, we're shutting down the parks for XYZ COVID or whatever. You know, they're using whatever excuse they can. And then the drone operators are basically at war with the park rangers on flying their drones, even though they won in court, there's still this battle going on. And in Nashville, Tennessee, during the BLM protests, a guy is battling in court right now too, because he put a drone up to film the protest because he has a business downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to see if anyone destroyed his business. So he threw a drone up, and then the cops arrested him for trespassing. I don't know how that shit works, because airspace is federal.
So I don't know how they get him on trespassing, because you're right. You can't, I took a whole aviation law course in college that was boring as hell. But one of the things is no, you can't prevent airplanes from flying over your house, because you don't own the airspace. Right. At the same time, there's nuisance laws and stuff. So like you see, you know, the thresholds of runways getting pushed back so that planes aren't flying as low over people's houses. You know, the neighbors complain all the time for every airport. Doesn't matter. But I guess they could get them because 107 rules still have, you know, minimum distances that you're required to stay away from people and vessels and all, you know, it's all the same stuff as normal airplanes. Like you can't just go buzz a protest or like I've seen guys flying along beaches and stuff. You know, you still have to maintain the proper distancing, like not even COVID wise.
What I imagine
flying too close to people, and there are rules within 107 that are the same, you know, same type of rule. You got to keep that vehicle away from people.
I don't think he was near the people. He's just watching from real high up to make sure no one fucked up his business. But what I imagine
happened is that you got to think where those protests are happening. So they're happening around like government buildings, police stations, or whatnot. And part 107 calls for, you know, there's certain buildings that are specially designated, courthouses, downtown government facilities and all that, that you cannot fly a drone within a certain range around that business. So maybe that's what they got the trespassing on, was that he was within that circle, within that restricted zone. You know, it's like flying over the headquarters. You know, there's a circle that you're just not supposed to be in.
I understand that, and I guess if that ends up being the case, then fine. But this guy appears to have been just flying over his own store. And they looped him in with the looting cases. So they roped him in as part of this big case against all the people that were looting and setting things on fire. And so his opinion on this is, I should not be considered part of this problem, part of this case. I was not enabling the people to loot and burn down buildings and stuff. I was just filming it. So, you know, considering that they did attack police stations and courthouses, you might be right that he was actually flying in vicinity of those and maybe got that on camera. Maybe that's what they're trying to get him on. But it still kind of begs the question, because these are just two incidents that I brought up, but this has been happening apparently across the country, especially recently with.
Well, so that's another question that comes up with the type of drones we're talking about is, what is this guy hoping to accomplish with like a 20-minute battery? I mean,
yeah,
like I have camera systems up around my house and stuff, and I mean they're pretty awesome. Like a couple of AA batteries are supposed to last 2 years. They don't, but I mean they last at least several months, and they're motion activated, so like it conserves power and everything. Like that makes sense. I can see people coming and going if they're, you know, if somebody comes up to my door, or the UPS guy or whatever, like I can see all that. And it's kind of like what we do with the military hardware. It's long-term persistent surveillance of my own property. This guy's sending up a drone to, you know, keep an eye on his place for security, and the battery lasts 20 minutes. Like what's he expecting?
Maybe he was doing it during the most heightened part of the protest.
Yeah, I mean, if there was like actual looting happening,
yeah, maybe
like
that's when it was actually happening.
When they called it a riot,
exactly.
Maybe and that's used it in a tactical sense. I could see that, but still, like, what's that? What's that going to do?
Yeah,
because these
kind of my question.
These happen at night, and those cameras on the drone on the like the DJIs, they don't have IR. I mean, some of them do. We went to this drone store in Dallas. And they had this whole setup that they used for search and rescue with a FLIR setup on like a DJI quadcopter. Mavic. Yeah, it was like a FLIR. It was a FLIR setup. But that thing is like $3,500 and it's totally badass. But I don't, this doesn't sound like the case where you had one of those. So a drone at night wasn't going to do anything to help his property. I mean, he could.
Well, was it at night?
Nothing that his security cameras couldn't have already done. Well, I don't know. Was it at night? Well,
I don't know the time of day, and I don't know, you know, maybe he just needed to see if anyone broke into his building. And maybe that's what he needed to see, if anyone stole anything from him. To be honest, it doesn't really matter to me why.
I think there's going to be one of those. I think there's going to be one of those cases that will, that, you know, the media side of it will come out, and then by the time we get to the end of it, it's who's to say that he couldn't get to his business because the crowd was all there, so he flew his drone from a parking lot 2 miles away and
that makes sense,
crossed all the signs. So but who knows? It's one of those cases. It's not cut and paste. So I mean, we're just gonna have to wait and see how this one plays out.
And then on top of that, Chris, you were talking about how they tried to lump him in with the rioters.
That's so the part.
At the end of the day, if they filled up every paddy wagon in that city and they arrested 1,000 people, every single person gets their own trial and they get to present their own evidence and they get to defend themselves individually. So it's still it's not like they're going to be like, oh, well, we've decided, you know, the jury says that these 25 protesters are all guilty and he just like gets carried away in it. I mean, he didn't get his own day.
His concern, though, is that he's being lumped in with a group of people that he had nothing to do with.
Oh, no. I agree with you. But my point is, like, that's the sensational news side. And the reality is, at the end of the day, he will get his own individual day in court if it even gets that far. I mean, because the prosecutor has to come up with a case for that, too.
Yeah.
So that they're going to say, all right, docket number 69 is, you know, Mike Jones, who, oh, he actually wasn't rioting. He was flying a drone over the riot, and now we got to find something to wait. Is that a crime? Like it, my guess is it gets resolved before it even gets inside a courtroom.
This concern is coming from him himself. This was on a YouTube video with him, and these were his concerns. So he is obviously dealing with the legal process the way it needs to go down.
Right.
But these are the concerns that he was voicing while it was, you know, with what he knows currently. But I still think that we're hitting on the wrong point. And that is, and not so much the legal part, but the justification of why, you know, did he need to be there or did he not need to be there? Or what was he doing? To me, it does not matter. The fact of the matter is people are getting arrested and charged that are flying quadcopters throughout the country in public places, even some that are federally authorized to be there.
You know, it's a new technology. Like it's not new, but in the grand scheme of things, like it's new-ish. And there's just so much just misinformation about drones and like sensationalism. Like how many times do you see a news story about like a plane flew within 5 miles of a drone in the, like, you know, that kind of news story. It's just people don't understand the technology, and the law has not caught up with the technology. So there's going to be friction points on it.
Yeah.
And I especially think, like, climates and the climate today with, you know, both law enforcement and the certain cases that we've talked about, it's easier just to, you know, the criminal justice system has, you know, two different sides, you know, police shovel shit into the courts and it's up to the courts to process it and they don't have to be there for it. So
I guess, drone community, though, as a whole, has been fighting a legal battle for quite some time.
Yeah, and it's not going to stop. I mean,
and they feel like they've won by getting the FAA to agree or at least come up with a set of guidelines.
That is a big step. For years, drones have operated in a gray zone. So,
right.
And now having actual rulings and laws and case law and precedent set is a huge step for drone operations and flying drones and recognizing drones. And it even helps us in our case of, you know, RPAs, much larger unmanned systems, to have the FAA actually speak out and set precedent for this technology, because that's the only way it's going to move forward, because everything in government moves at a snail's pace.
Well, and that's totally it, is we just have to get to the point where this stuff is normalized, because
exactly.
At the speed of government, this is still like pre-infancy. I mean, we have not had, you know, you've always had the hobbyists with their remote control planes and shit, and they don't really bother anybody and nobody cared. But now, you know, every kid is getting a drone for Christmas and it's got a camera on it. And, you know, Chris, we talked about this before in one of the prior episodes about how it was mandated that the Part 107 rules be done by 2015. So around 2017, they actually happened. And so we're talking 3 years that we've been really like, there's been a system in place and there's actually been something for people to violate. So it's going to be a while before these rules are normalized and every dude that goes down to Best Buy and picks up his favorite quadcopter is even aware of this shit to be able to follow it or, you know, to decide not to. But you know, like
regulation is always going to fall behind technology.
You've got to develop the culture for it at this point. And, you know, I'm reading, Jimmy Doolittle's book, like his autobiography.
Jimmy Doolittle?
Yeah, the guy that did the Tokyo raid after Pearl Harbor, like famous in the Air Force.
The actual good part of Pearl Harbor?
Like the stuff that he was talking about in like, you know, he was in during World War One. He didn't actually go to war in that conflict. But like the 19 teens up through like the 30s or 40s, it was cowboy country. Like anybody could hop into a flying machine, as they called them, and, you know, just go and do whatever the hell they wanted. I mean, that dude's crashed more planes than I've flown. And
have you heard a story about the dude that landed in Times Square in New York?
Yes.
Twice.
Yeah. So, I mean, shit like that happened early in the aviation thing. And nobody was going to go ask Jimmy Doolittle for his license because there wasn't a license to have. And
yeah, but now there is.
But that's what I'm saying is it's now we're in like.
We've normalized licenses and the regulations. We've normalized that part. And so we think we have this sphere worked out. But then here's this whole new technology. And what are they using in technology, you know, to turn something on its head, revolutionize it? I don't know. I can't remember the name of the words.
You're all on your own on this one. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Innovating.
Innovation. Yeah. We'll call it that. Innovation. I'm sure some listeners out there is like, it's this word. How are you so dumb?
Get up in the comments.
Here's my point, though. The drone community is frustrated, and I think that there's a validity behind this. And the reason is because they fought for fucking 10 years to get these laws in place. And the laws are now in place. And the federal laws, which strictly say state and local officials will not intervene or prohibit the flight of these vehicles by these professionals, is pretty clear cut. And that's why these guys won the case in court.
I mean, say this out loud, I'm not a lawyer, but like anytime we think something is clear cut in law, it's not. Just because they write the law, like federal law like that, like the federal government comes down to the states and say, hey, you cannot do this. They'll just go right back to the Constitution and say, okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Nope, no drones in that first 10. 11 on, everything down to the states. So
I am a bit of a constitutionalist, but I'm not going to go as far as to say that since drones aren't in the Constitution, it doesn't exist.
That's where it gets messy is what I'm saying, is that there's going to be back and forth. There's going to be, it's going to go lawyers and courts and precedents and legalities.
These guys won in court.
Ipso factos vis-a-vis.
These guys won in court and the cops were told to stand down by their own judge in their county, their district, whatever, right? They were told to stand down. And they still said, fuck the judge's ruling. We're going to mess with these guys anyway.
ACABs is staying for a reason.
That's why the drone community in Michigan is kind of rebelling and basically saying, anyone out of state, we don't even care where you're from, come to Michigan and fuck with these cops. And I think it's bad. I think it's bad on the drone community because you are waging a war that you don't need to wage. And you're going to make yourselves look bad. And you're going to get more hot water than you need to be. And I think the other side of it, right, is that the cops know that they lost in court. They verbalized this over the radio that they knew that they had lost and they were told to leave these guys alone. And they still said, nah, fuck this. We're going to go out and we're going to mess with these drone guys because they were pissed off because it was a pride thing. And so there is I wouldn't say a storm brewing, but you have an issue now where the drone operators that are legally authorized to operate for financial gain, this is a business to them. And you have local law enforcement disregarding judge at the local and federal rulings to say, nah, we're gonna piss off the drone guys because fuck them. And I think this is just recent. This is during this summer. This is last few weeks this shit's been happening. So it is a recent event, and I think it was worth discussing. What is the solution here? Do the cops need to back off? Do the drone operators need to back off? Does both parties? I mean, I know that cops right now are dealing with a whole lot of shit that has nothing to do with drone operators, but it seems like they are ready to pick a fight they don't need to pick.
All right, so I've got a solution. It's a two-part solution. So here's part one.
Ring the bell. Ding, I need to get a bell. Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, there you go. But actually, that feeds into part B of my solution, which is, we need to get, like, there needs to be more outreach and more familiarization of the general public with what these guys are, you know, what we are trying to do. Because drones are a scary thing. They're a new thing. They're, you know, like we've talked about, these sensational stories where, oh, holy shit, some guy was flying a quadcopter on short final at JFK.
Shut down the airport for 10 hours.
Yeah, and some of these are real problems, right? I mean, I don't... Mm-hmm. Like, I still do a little bit of man flying, and I don't want some idiot trying to, you know, film something next to the airport.
Right.
And I don't want to hit that guy with my sniper or whatever.
You're talking about people that are breaking the rules.
Right.
Those are criminals. Those are criminals. As far as I'm
concerned. At the same time, though, there's a lot of, and hell, we know this from our profession, there's a ton of ignorance around anything that's flying. And especially the unmanned stuff. So, I mean, the general public doesn't know shit about airplanes. And, you know, you see that every time that there's some airliner declared an emergency. And this is like making the 11 o'clock news for like a straight week when it was no big deal, right? So now they've got all this unmanned stuff to latch onto. And it's still, maybe it's a big deal, maybe it's not, but it's sensational. So it gets all the airtime. And then these cops, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt and assume that they think that they're doing something to protect the people that they're, you know, they're employed to protect, right? They think that they're doing something in the positive.
Come on now. A guy
bear with me for a second. I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt for just a minute. But here's the thing. They don't know the fucking drone guys. And the drone guys don't know the cops. When was the last time that you got into a room with somebody that you thought you would hate forever? But then you sit there and talk to him, and you're like, this guy's not so bad. And when I learn a little bit more about him, you know.
Right when we pressed record on this podcast. No, I'm
just kidding. That's every deployment.
You've got the asshole on the other end of Merck every time we do a launch and recovery operation.
Every guy I talk to.
So the point is, like, maybe that police department needs to get with that Michigan State Drone Pilots Association or whatever, and they need to go and have a beer summit. You know, hey, guys, we're going to go to this bar. We're going to get, you know, a bunch of the cops and a bunch of the drone pilots. We're not going to
bring beer summit. That's so 2014.
Way to slap him with that pre-COVID notion.
Yeah, right.
Obama beer. Notion. Let's have a beer over this. Let's talk. We don't do that no more.
No.
Drunken Drones is totally not anything.
Drunken Drones doesn't give a shit. It's 2020 now.
No, but my point is, like, both sides are ignorant of the other side, and we see this in every facet of life. When one side doesn't understand the other side, then they want to fight about it and have a riot and, you know, burn down the sports authority.
All right. Let me pitch this one to you, okay? Because this happens at every traffic stop, right? You don't know the guy that you pull over, just like you don't know the policeman that pulls you over. If let's say you're driving on a highway and the speed limit is 65 and you're going 64. You are abiding by the legal law of the land and you get pulled over. Of course there's going to be potential animosity. Of course there's going to be confusion.
Why there'll be animosity if you're going 90. There's going to be animosity because it's a disruption to your day.
But when you are speeding and you're knowingly breaking the law and you get pulled over, you kind of do that thing where you're like, shit, he caught me. He caught me, right? Because, fuck, I was definitely speeding. But if you're going slower than the speed limit and you get pulled over, you don't think for 1 second, oh my God, I can't believe I did this. So when these guys that are 107 qualified and they have gone through testing and they've gone through legal and they've gone through everything to say, this is what you have to do in order to be compliant according to the United States of America. And then they go out and they operate under those legal rules that, they go out and they operate exactly the way they're supposed to legally, and they still get arrested and have all their shit confiscated and their cell phones taken from them and everything else. Don't you feel like that's a little bit of an issue? I don't know if that's really something.
Oh, it definitely is. But like what I'm getting at is, was it a drone issue or was it an individual issue with how they interact with the cops, or was it just the cops and they're just a bunch of bastards? I think there's more to it than just the drone side, but yes, it is a problem with ignorance of the law that it keeps happening to drone operators. I'll agree with you on that point, but like the specific incident in Michigan that we're talking about, I don't know. It kind of sounds like everybody sucks.
I would say that it escalated unnecessarily, but I think that the initial reaction, the guy was arrested. He complied. He was arrested. He complied. They took all of his shit. He went to court. He won. The cops were told to stand down. They didn't. They went after them again. And after the second time, he said, all right, everybody, fuck this. Let's go. And at that point, you can almost say that he had been instigated.
Yeah.
Because he complied with the law. He gave them the law. And they
said, I'm going to say that every time.
What?
It's like, I am the law.
I'm just saying.
I think this is a big case on both sides of not knowing how to choose your battles.
I think that the battle was already.
And another point too, like you said, this was a state park. This is like a state park.
These guys are flying above the trees, not bothering anybody, by the way.
One of the pilots, I think we all know him or aware of him. I'm not going to name him, but he was a state park law enforcement, and he was just a dick. And it's just like, I don't know if it's just like the pool of people that they select them from, but when we say law enforcement, state parks, there's a different level
talking
and
about.
And they just threw all the park rangers under the bus with that.
I'm gonna throw them under the park because some of them are great, some
they're
of
like
them
like VA doctors.
The Little Kingdoms. We all have seen those. We've seen those guys. Yeah, maybe they're like VA doctors. You know what they call a? Doctor that got a C in medical school? Captain.
Oh shit.
Captain.
Sorry, Colin. You did get out as a captain, but.
I mean, I did, but. Wait, are you? Never mind. I'm not even going there.
No, it's okay. You're a pilot.
Well, and then on top of that,
man, you didn't even hit the ping pong ball back, dude. I threw like a little tiny match of a burn towards you, and you sat in silence.
No, I was actually going to talk a bunch of shit about military doctors, but I think the moment's gone.
Dude, your immediate retort to that is, shut up, you're a censor.
Shut up, censor. Go take out the trash.
I fucking gave it to you. I loved you.
Go mop. Go mop something.
Yeah,
see, this is how cool of a pilot I am that I would never consider talking to my colleague in the GCS in that kind of manner.
Hey, the general's coming. Go clean out the bottom of those trash cans.
Going all professional. You need a stronger beer than a Yingling so you can fire back at me a little bit.
Well, he's trying to keep the peace because he knows that when the time comes, you're going to remember this day later and you're just going to be like, go around.
No, he's going to remember this a year from now when he tells me I don't have a job.
Oh.
Yeah, there it is.
90, 80, welcome, 70, welcome. Go around.
And here we go. We are pivoting ATLC.
Oh, shit.